Let me read to us from Acts chapter 14, verses 1 to 7, which says this: At Iconium, and this is during the Apostle Paul. If you know the book of Acts, he goes on all these missionary journeys. They're not holidays. They'd make nice holidays if you didn't do any of the work he did. It's missionary journeys. This is in the first missionary journeys. He goes around all of these places telling people about Jesus and the good news about Jesus. And this is where we get to in Acts 14. At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the Jewish synagogue, and there they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Greeks believed. But the Jews who refused to believe stirred up the other Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers. So Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time there speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to perform signs and wonders. And the people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews, others with the apostles. There was a plot afoot among both Gentiles and Jews, together with their leaders, to ill-treat them and stone them. But they found out about it and fled to the Laconian cities of Lystra and Derbe and to the surrounding country, where they continued to preach the gospel. Well, there's, in my mind, too many stories of people that we know, or maybe that you know, maybe you've seen in this church, who began the race of following Jesus, who maybe investigated the truth about Jesus, had loads of questions. Maybe they peppered you with all of those questions. And at one point, it looked like they were going to say yes to Jesus. They were going to start following Jesus. They realized that he was true, that he was real, that he was good news for their life. And so they said yes. Maybe they nearly said yes. Maybe they said yes. But since then, they've stopped running the race and given up before the finish line. And the truth is, this is not just true when it comes to following Jesus. In all of life, when we face challenges, we know the temptation to give up. Do you know, at the beginning of this year, on New Year's Eve, I said to a friend of mine, and I wasn't drunk when I said this, I promise you, I just had this conversation. I said, I want to do something. I want to do a challenge this year. And I know you like doing adventure and challenges. So let's go and climb a mountain. Let's do Ben Nevis. And I used to do mountains when I was little, climb mountains, but I haven't done any mountains for ages. So I said, let's climb Ben Nevis. Now, when you look at me, I know some of you will think this guy's in peak physique, but the truth is that I'm not in peak physique at the moment. So as I'm three quarters of the way up this mountain, and we didn't really take into account the weather conditions early on in the year, we get to the part of the mountain, it's kind of three quarters of the way up, and suddenly the cloud comes low over, so you literally can't see anything in front of you. And the snow as well on the mountain. I used to climb mountains in the summer. I forgot that you get snow on these mountains. Three quarters of the way up, I start to cramp up. I've not drunk enough water. I was in the scouts, and the motto was always be prepared, but I was not prepared for this. I hadn't drunk enough, and start cramping up. And I genuinely started asking the question, how am I going to do this? I can't. I'm going to have to quit. I'm not a quitter. I hate quitting, but I'm going to have to quit. Just recently, I accidentally climbed Snowdon, the highest mountain in Wales. I got three quarters of the way up that mountain as well. I say accidentally. It wasn't accidental. It was kind of deliberate, but last minute, get three quarters of the way up there, and I start thinking the same thing. How am I going to do this? It's just endless, on and on. But spiritually speaking, the problem of giving up before the finish line bugs me a lot. Because as I look at Christ Church Orchard Park, the church that I've come from, and maybe this rings true for you, as I look at our church, we have a church that is actually really encouraging. We're slowly growing in kind of everywhere. We're growing in our maturity. I'm seeing such encouragement in the people of God, but we're growing in number as well. Like I've mentioned, someone has become a Christian. There's other people who come in regularly on Sundays, non-Christians, here, there, and everywhere, and it's wonderful and it's amazing. But we all know that when we see these encouragements for any person that looks like they're showing signs of turning to Jesus, we all know that when we're running a race, there is a moment that everyone who runs that marathon hits the wall. And spiritually speaking, it's true as well. Whether it's the pull of cheap thrill pleasures of life that say, sit down, chill out, choose me. Whether it's the pain of the race that's left us asking, why should I bother carrying on with God? And even for those of us who are still in the race at the moment, well, you know, we feel like we're running, we've got a good jog going on in this race. There's always that temptation, isn't there? I'm going to keep going, but you know what? I think I might just start walking for a little bit. Or I'll just take a little rest on the sideline for a while. I'm going to take some time out. Because we're finding church hard. Small church like ours in Hull, a small church like yours here, will bring constant strains and struggles, won't it? You're finding the people hard. This is your church family. But as you're running along, they keep bumping into you. Like, stay in your lane, stay on your side of the road. They keep bumping into you, knocking you off balance. You're finding getting out there into the community hard, living for Jesus at work, living for Jesus amongst your family is tough. Running a youth club for us where you get the police turning up to sort problems out. I didn't sign up for that. Come on. But here's what Acts chapter 14, verse 1 to 7 tells us tonight. Wherever you are in the race with Jesus, it tells us this. Keep going, friends. Keep going. Before we get into Acts chapter 14, I want to start with Hebrews chapter 12, because here's what Hebrews chapter 12 tells us what to do, and then I want to show you how Acts chapter 14 shows us what to do and gives us a great example of it. But here's Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 to 2. Let us run the race with perseverance. Perseverance is just the Bible word for keep going. And Acts 14 is now going to show us how to live Hebrews 12. See, in Acts 14, we're told, aren't we, in verse 1, that we arrive in this place called Iconium. Now, previously to this story, the HQ, the headquarters of the church in Antioch, have just sent out their best agents. Paul and Barnabas have headed out on this mission journey to spread the message of Jesus far and wide. And so they start out in Cyprus, in this place called Paphos. I called it another thing, and a guy in our church who was in the army really told me off for pronouncing the word wrong because he was stationed there. It's Paphos. They cross to Perga in Pamphylia. Then they go up to this place called Pisidian Antioch, where they get persecuted and kicked out of there, but they keep going, and here they arrive at Iconium. And three times we'll see in this story of Acts 14, three times we'll see Paul and Barnabas persevere, keep going. Let's read verse 1 all together. At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the Jewish synagogue. There they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Greeks believe. So here we have, in that first verse, the first keep going. Previously in the story, they've been persecuted in Pisidian Antioch. They've been kicked out of that place, but we arrive at Iconium and they keep going. Where do they go? They go straight into the Jewish synagogue. They dust themselves off. They say, we're getting to work. We're going to tell these people about Jesus. They keep going the first time, but here we come to the second keep going. Verse 2, the Jews who refused to believe. That's an interesting phrase, isn't it? Refused to believe, just so stubborn in their hearts. They refused to believe. They stirred up the other Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers. You see, the enemies of the gospel start whispering in the people's ears. This is a common theme throughout the book of Acts. Don't get too close to those Christians, the bad news, the weirdos. Don't get too close to them. Today, when those whispers come, it maybe comes in the form of this. Don't get too close to those do-gooders, the Bible bashers, those judgmental people that hate everyone. They're only after people's money. They abuse people. These kind of things get said all the time about churches. There's a lot of gossip that goes on about churches in the world. It's actually a great reason for us to keep gossip out of the church. I find this more and more. I'm having to face all of the stereotypes and barriers and things that people believe about our church in the community. I'm having to deal with all of that. That I keep thinking, man, let's keep gossip out of our church. We have enough issue dealing with what's been said about us out there, that we want to keep things pure inside. We don't want to be spending our time fighting half-truths and hidden bitterness inside the church. We need to deal with those issues inside because we have enough issues to deal with outside. We deal with the things inside graciously. But back to the story. For Paul, when there is trouble, it means that he's done his job properly. We're getting it in the neck, so we're going to hang around, says Paul. This is the second, keep going. And just notice what happens in verse 3. Listen to this. Verse 2. But the Jews who refused to believe stared at the other Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers. Verse 3. So, therefore, Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time there, speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to perform signs and wonders. This just isn't the mentality we have, is it? When the going gets tough, we get halfway, three quarters up the mountain, we sit down and we think, I'm going to stop. I can't do this Jesus thing. I'm getting in the neck. Not Paul. Paul says, things are getting hard. So, therefore, we're going to keep going. This is a sign that God is doing something here. We're getting gossiped and slandered about, but second time round, we keep going. And verse 4 reminds us that the gospel preached loudly and clearly is always going to bring a Marmite response. And Paul thinks, when he sees this, great, we must be doing something right. Verse 4, the people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews, others with the apostles. But it starts to get a lot worse than this. This is gunpowder, treason and plot kind of stuff as we come up to November. There was a plot afoot among both Gentiles and Jews, together with their leaders, verse 5, to mistreat them and stone them. In so many parts of the world, Christians are being plotted against today. And if you want any evidence that humanity is corrupt, it's the fact that the people of light, wherever you find Christians, wherever you find the light of the gospel, we're constantly getting a kick in. This is a good thing to say to non-Christians. Why is it? Why is it that people hate Christians so much? Why is it that people hate the church so much? All over the world, wherever you find people of light, you find the darkness trying to put the light out, don't you? But verse 6, as this plot thickens amongst both Gentiles and Jews, verse 6, they found out about it and fled to the Lycaonian cities of Lystra and Derbe and to the surrounding country, where, get this, for the third time, they continued to preach the gospel. They keep going. So finally, we get to this point where we can't actually carry on the ministry anymore. The persecution has got so bad. We've kept going once. We've kept going twice. Now it's got so bad that we're physically going to have to leave. Otherwise, we just can't actually do anything. But even when we leave, we're going to go to the next place and do what? Continue to keep going, to preach the gospel. They're absolutely devoted to it, aren't they? See, we're inspired, aren't we, by the stories of Christian martyrs who have given up their lives telling the good news about Jesus all over the world. We're inspired by men like, if you've heard of them, Hudson Taylor and C.T. Studd, who kept going and took the gospel to China. I just met a couple in this church. Is it Gavin and May, who've just come back from China? Yeah, I was talking to them this morning. They've just come back from China. It was fascinating learning a bit more about the church in China, what God is doing in that country, but also some of the pressures that they're facing. The gospel that came to China because of men like Hudson Taylor and C.T. Studd. But then there's also a lesser known English man called J.O. Fraser. And I love the story of this guy, this Chinese missionary who just had the worst possible time in southwest China. J.O., I think it's called J.O. Fraser, I know he's Fraser, went to the mountain region of southwest China to work amongst the Lisu people. He was in a very remote area. I'd encourage you to go and read his story. He suffered terribly for six long years. He hardly saw a single person become a Christian. He gave his whole life to the work. He was isolated in his life. He was depressed. He was ill. He was faced with horrendous skin conditions. He had little possessions. He was attacked at various points and very nearly killed. However, by the end of his life, despite all of that, it is estimated that 60,000 of the Lisu people had become Christians directly through his ministry. Now, we may not see 60,000 converts. There's not 60,000 people on my estate, let alone seeing 60,000 converts. But the lesson is clear that these men and women had something that kept them going. Something that Paul and Barnabas had that kept them going in the ministry. And so in our final bit of time that we have left, I want to show us three things that I think Paul and Barnabas had. Paul and Barnabas had knowledge of three things that these Christians, like Fraser, like Hudson Taylor, had that kept them going. Three things that we find in the Word of God that if we would know them and believe them and hold on to them, it would encourage us to keep going in the face of difficulties. Firstly, this: know that God is working in the pain of his people in hard times and hard places. So keep going. Suffering is one of the biggest questions we face, isn't it, as Christians? The reality is, all of us Christians suffer. So when we're dealing with those questions, all of us are suffering one way or another. Whether you believe in God or not, suffering is ultimately a problem for everyone. For those who don't believe in God, suffering is just meaningless, random, and then you die. But for those of us who do, when we get faced with that question, why does God allow suffering like this? However, ultimately, what I'm learning more and more to do when faced with that question is to talk about the one thing that we have as Christians that the world doesn't have. And what is that? In the face of suffering, we have great hope. With Jesus, suffering is always hard, yet never hopeless. There is future hope, isn't there? We have the best future hope in the world. There's literally, God is going to have a massive clear out of all the rubbish in the world, and there's going to be a place of no more tears, pain, or suffering. But it's not only that that should keep us going in the Christian life. It is not only looking to the future, the future hope, but it is the present promises of God that we must know as we drive forward and keep going. Do you notice in our passage that despite all of the persecution that comes time and time again, they keep going, that God had not left Paul and Barnabas? It wasn't a simple mentality that was batten down the hatches, you know, stiff upper lip. Let's get into our holy huddle. We'll just stay indoors. We'll put on Netflix and hide away from the world. No, God was with Paul and Barnabas, and they knew it and believed it. God came in power despite massive problems and persecution. We saw that back in verse 3. So Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time in this place, speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to perform signs and wonders. Isn't that wonderful? God has not left his people. God was with Paul and Barnabas. Now, the reality is that in the middle of suffering and pain, God doesn't always promise to show up with fireworks. Sometimes he does. Sometimes he comes and does amazing things in the middle of our struggles, in the middle of our persecutions, when we're ready to give up, when we're ready to stop running the race. But God does promise to continue to work, whether it's in the form of signs and wonders or whether it's in the form of being with us and keeping us going. When we remain faithful to Jesus in prayer, in listening to him in the Bible, in drawing close to him, God promises to work in us. So here is one of the hardest verses in the Bible, and yet one of the most hopeful verses in the Bible for us, in James chapter 1, verse 5. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. There is a promise from God that no matter what is going on in the ministry of this church, no matter what is going on in your personal ministry, consider it pure joy. Why? Because God has not left the building. God's here. God is working. I could list many more verses like this. Hard, hard verses, but hopeful verses. It's clear, isn't it? It's only when the axe and the chisel is brought down on the lump of wood that the wood becomes the beautiful sculpture that the designer intended it to be. It is often only when the metal is put into fire that it becomes the razor-sharp sword that can be wielded and used by God. God often uses the harder moments of the Christian's race to shape us into the children he would have us be. And Paul and Barnabas knew it. And so three times they kept going. So what does this mean for us? Well, firstly, we can have confidence that God is with us and working in us in our personal trials to keep going. We can have confidence when church life is hard that God is with us and so keep going. We can have confidence that when we get opposition amongst colleagues, family, friends, community, for what we believe and what we do, we can have confidence God is working, because blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me, says Jesus. Keep going, because God is working in the pain of his people. But secondly, keep going because you know that Jesus is the only hope in hard times and hard places. So keep going because Paul and Barnabas knew he's working, but keep going because Paul and Barnabas knew that Jesus is the only hope in hard times and hard places for people. If you imagine being at the seaside on a stormy day and suddenly you see someone in trouble in the water, what do you do? And you see one of those rescue rings. Can you imagine picking up the rescue ring and just holding on to it, standing with it, because you're unsure whether the rescue ring is actually going to do the job? They're just down there. The water's choppy. It's smashing the person up against the wall. You just hold on to it. I don't know if this is going to work. I'm not sure. I'll go and see if someone else can help. No, you chuck it in the water, don't you? You get it out there immediately. You save the person who is drowning. And sometimes, in truth, we can be like those people on the edge of the water, holding on to the rescue ring. But what gave Paul and Barnabas the edge to keep speaking boldly for the Lord, verse 3, despite suffering and persecution? Well, it's this, that they were utterly convinced that the message of the gospel is the real rescue ring, the real lifeboat, the only hope. When faced with the reality of a God who is perfect and just, when faced with the reality of hell, when faced with the reality of lost people, Paul and Barnabas are compelled to throw the good news rescue ring of the gospel into the water. Me and Emma lived in, I was going to say Caleb, he wasn't around at the time. We lived in Scarborough, and often that lifeboat would be going out to save people. Often you'd see it going out, especially on stormy days. But they didn't, when they got the phone call through, they didn't sit there with their feet up having a coffee, did they, saying, "I reckon someone else will sort it out." No, we have the answer, they say. We have the lifeboat. We have the message of his grace for salvation. So let's go and take it out to people. A girl on our estate who became a Christian when I was at college tells the beautiful story of how she became a Christian. And it was through a process. I remember I invited her to an event at our college where someone was answering questions about God and all of that stuff. She came along and she was interested. But it was a process for her working out whether the lifeboat was sinkable or not. And she asked questions. She said, "Is this Jesus lifeboat sinkable?" And so she prodded and poked it and she realized, no, it wasn't sinkable. What keeps Paul and Barnabas going? That they have the lifeboat. They have the rescue ring of the gospel. It must be proclaimed. So keep going because you confidently know that God is working in the difficult times. Keep going because we have the only hope of the gospel. And finally, keep going because we know that God has more work to be done in hard times and hard places. What happened right at the end of this section? Well, the same thing that has happened throughout the book of Acts, chapter 13 and 14, the same thing that will happen throughout the book of Acts as you continue to read through it, if you were to do that. Paul and Barnabas move on to the next place, Lystra and Derbe. See, Paul and Barnabas have this gospel radar that is switched on and working constantly, showing up places and people who need to know Jesus. And so even in the moments when they face rejection, even in the moments when in the synagogue they've been chatting to someone and he's saying, "Yeah, I'm interested in this Jesus," but then the next minute he's saying, "Actually, you know what? I think it's a load of rubbish. The Jewish leaders have been telling me it's all made up story." So disappointed. But the gospel radar is switched on. And so immediately there are more places and there are more people that need Jesus. And so off they go to Lystra and Derbe. Off they go to the next person who might be receptive to the gospel because God has his people. We're only scratching the surface in Hardwick. How do I know that? Because there's 7,000 people that live here. I bet we don't know all 7,000. We might know some, which is great. We're only scratching the surface at Orchard Park. We know some people. We don't know many. Some of them are rejecting. There was a guy who came along. We had a mission week back earlier this year. He came along. He was showing all the signs. No one else spoke to me more about Jesus after the service. No one else was more engaged in the sermons I was preaching. No one else seemed more hungry. He's gone. But I had no idea about this lady who was going to be putting her hand up to say, I want to follow Jesus. It was so discouraging, but God has his people. Keep your gospel radar switched on like Paul and Barnabas. There is work still to be done. Why is it we often struggle with petty things in life? Often because our radar's been switched off. We've lost sight of the great need of the gospel in our city, in our town, in our area, in our street, in our country, in our village, in our world, wherever it is. Keep expecting a big God to do big things through his church and ultimately through the gospel. There is so much left to be done. Keep going, friends. Know that God is working in the hard times. Paul and Barnabas knew that. Keep going because you know that the gospel is the only hope. And keep going because you know there is more work to be done. God has his people. Keep taking Jesus to them. Let's finish with these words from Hebrews chapter 12. Verses 1-3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart.